The common thread through my entire career has been inspiring action, innovation, leadership development, and team building.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to this episode of How I Work. This is Josh Becerra from Agrarian. I'm super excited to introduce today's guest, Dina Main, Chief Operating Officer of Keystone Group International, where she's responsible for supporting the organization's growth to ensure strong delivery of the company's guiding principles, leadership development, culture, organizational strategy, and growth. Prior to working at Keystone, Dina spent 25 years in large corporate environments like 3M and Ecolab, furthering her passion for leadership development. Thanks so much for being here today, Dina.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. So you've had an amazing career, starting in the marketing function, but evolving over time to strategy, leadership, and development. Can you share a few highlights with the audience of your road that's taken you all the way now to Keystone Group?
Sure, absolutely. Very much an untraditional path, especially from a marketing standpoint. So started my career at 3M, actually in an administrative assistant role. And I won't go into all the details, but quickly realized that wasn't a great fit and had an opportunity through 3M to go back to school and further my education and actually then go into marketing. And so at 3M is where I found my passion for innovation and trying to inspire people to take action. I got to work on some really great commercials, some great products at 3M. But then my passion really folded into international and wanting to be exposed to other cultures, which is what led me to Ecolab. And spent most of my career at Ecolab working outside of the U.S., building teams, building organizations in Latin America and Asia Pacific, all under the marketing umbrella, but had an opportunity to touch a lot of different things. And the common thread through my entire career has been inspiring action, innovation, leadership development, and team building. So that's followed me throughout my whole career, where I've got to do a whole host of things that were really unique and fun and challenging as well, from building teams to defining a large organization's new purpose, vision, and values that's still alive today, and helping organizations completely transform to a customer-centric mindset. So it's been fun.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, we're going to unpack some of those stories, because I know that, for example, you have an amazing story about one particular conversation you had at 3M that continues to kind of influence you today. I love that story. So can you share a little bit of that story and its impact on you?
Absolutely. So very early in my career at 3M, very young, I started at 3M at 19. And so early in that career stage as an administrative assistant, I was going to work one day, and for whatever reason, the main tower building of 3M, where all the executives live, had been flooded. And it was early, it was like 6:30 in the morning, something like that. So no one was aware yet that this had happened, but none of the elevators were working. So I had to take the stairs up to my floor. Upon entering the stairwell, I noticed that the 3M CEO at that time, Desi DeSimone, so any 3Mers who might be listening may remember him, quite an iconic leader for 3M. Well, I quickly noticed he was not that far ahead of me in the stairwell, and he was, you know, a large person, just large persona, bigger than life personality, and the CEO of a massive company, and I was a nobody at 19, basically. Yeah. So panic quickly set in, and it was through that experience, as I was debating, like, what do I do? Do I just like walk really slow? Do I exit and wait and come back in the stairwell? What am I going to do? As I'm kind of thinking this through, he said, Hey, you behind me, I can hear you. Why don't you come walk beside me? And so, what do you do?
So you do, I went what the and boss walked, says.
Yes, exactly. So, and I went and walked beside him for about 11 floors, and we had a great conversation, but it was through that experience that I definitely knew what I wanted my impact to be. Through that conversation, Desi asked me a lot of questions about what I wanted to do. Was I being supported by my managers? Was I being given opportunities and challenges to stretch myself and grow while at 3M? He never once asked me what my role was, never asked me where my college degree was from, none of that. was really about what did I want to do and was I getting experiences from 3M that would help me grow. And probably in that moment, I didn't realize what an impactful conversation that was. But upon going home that night, I was carpooling with some friends back then, and it was coming home and telling them that story that it hit me, like, that's what I want to be. I want to be someone who generally, like, has genuine care for others and doesn't really care about the pedigree or the path that you've taken, but really, where are you trying to go and how can we help you get there? And so that was a huge influence on me and how I lead today and why I want to be in a leadership position.
Yeah. I so love that story. And it's like, it's a built-in metaphor, right? Like, hey, you, come walk beside me, right? And for 11 floors, wasn't like, you know, you can go around me and race ahead because you're more agile and younger or whatever. It wasn't like, stay back there. It was beside me. So anyway, I love that story. And it is so kind of relevant to leaders today.
Yeah, it had a big impact. And back then, he was a huge believer in what was servant leadership, which still lives on today in a variety of different ways, shapes, and form. But in all the leaders that I had exposure to at 3M, they led with that mindset. And that's how I got the opportunity to go back to school and continue my growth and career trajectory that all started at 3M.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. Well, I'm sure there's probably some 3Mers out there who are like, yeah, let's go. So, you know, you mentioned when you were talking a little bit about your career trajectory that you had the opportunity to lead some global initiatives, which gave you the opportunity to travel the world, see different cultures. You and I, you know, I've spent time living and working overseas, as you know, in Montevideo, Uruguay for 10 years. So, and I've spent time all over, you know, the world. But you had the opportunity to do this multiple times, multiple continents. So can you just talk a little bit about that experience and what you learned from kind of seeing different cultures and living and working overseas?
Gosh, where to start? Just so grateful for the learning opportunity. I think being exposed, I grew up in a small town on a farm where it was a farming community. Everyone was the same. Everyone was facing the same challenges. And just kind of a smaller mindset in terms of what, you know, every day was about survival on the farm, more or less. So not a lot of concern about bigger picture things. And so being exposed to other cultures just gave me the opportunity to better understand how other people are living life, what their cares and concerns are about. And I would say probably one common theme of growing up in a small town on a farm with not a lot of money was the survival mode, which happens in a lot of other cultures outside of the U.S. So I'd say that was a common theme. But the community focus was really significant, especially traveling to Latin America. I would always get picked up and brought to family events as part of my travels. I was never alone for very long, so that was phenomenal. And then in Asia, one of the things that I think I mentioned to you too was just, you know, you hear a lot about women being able to have an impact, and it might be harder in Asia. And one of the things I am most proud of is the impact I was able to have in Asia, specifically building up a team of women. So when I started in my role in having responsibility for Asia Pacific, there were no women on the team. And so by the time I left, we had not only gotten a large group of women within a variety of different roles, but we also had women in key leadership positions. And one of those women was actually in a general manager role leading Japan, which was a huge accomplishment. So definitely you can have an impact in areas where people say it's really hard. And it was a team effort for sure. I had a boss who was a huge proponent of diverse opinions, and with that comes female opinions, not just male opinions. And so he was a huge proponent of that, which definitely helped pave the way for me to have more of an impact in Asia Pacific. But the same in Latin America as well, bringing women into leadership roles. And it was really more about balancing that voice. You know, you have all women, it's the same thing, right? You want to have diverse opinions, diverse ways of thinking. And men and women definitely have different ways of seeing the world and different experiences. And so I think there's a tremendous amount of value and having both. And so working outside of the US just gave me exposure to how do you do that in environments who may not appreciate that or where it might be more difficult. And also the importance of having advocates and how do you find those advocates? How do you build them and get them just supporting what you're trying to accomplish and show the business impact, right? I think anytime you can tie what some people might perceive the softer things to business impact, you can really make things happen.
Yeah. And I think there's plenty of studies out there that show that when you have more diversity within rooms and decision-making, you just have better outcomes. Like there's just so many different lived experiences. And I, you know, having lived myself in Latin America, I can only imagine you as a woman, like that was probably pretty groundbreaking. I haven't spent time in Japan, but I've, you know, you hear some of the stories about how business is conducted. And yeah, I can only imagine that you were finding new ways to like be an advocate for yourself and others. So kudos to you.
Yeah. And, you know, again, I think it goes back to the passion I have, which is inspiring action. And so how to show those teams, and back then it was my male leadership team, how the dynamic of a conversation can shift, and a lively conversation and debate, healthy tension, leads to better outcomes and leads to better business results. And so it started small and had to build some credibility along the way. But once you build credibility and establish trust, a lot of things can happen pretty quickly.
Yeah. Yeah, we talk a lot about radical candor around here, right? Where people in that quadrant care very deeply about something, but they're willing to have difficult conversations and divergent thinking. And I think it's really important. Of course, you need to have trust. There has to be kind of psychological safety. So there's a lot of things that go into that, but yeah. Really, really amazing.
The other thing I would even just say on that topic, it's not just men and women. I worked at an organization where, if you are familiar with the insights, the personality test, the bulk of the executive leadership team were red and blue, which means driver, let's get stuff done, action oriented. And blue is I need all the detail. I need all the analytics. I need all the data. Yeah. And so the bulk of that executive leadership team was red and blue. And that's lack of diversity as well. And it showed in engagement results. The engagement results were we don't understand the purpose of the organization. We're not inspired by the mission of the organization. We don't understand how our role contributes to the greater good, because that red and blue can sometimes lack some of that orange, yellow energy, which is inspire, engage, you know, show people the vision, get them inspired behind it. And so even, you know, just want to call out, it's not always men and women. It's also personality, diversity that makes a big difference.
Yeah, that's a great call out. So we've talked about the importance of business culture as a primary driving factor for any successful business. Can you help define or unpack the concept of servant leadership or Keystone's conscious leadership that I know is the foundation that you use for creating and maintaining a successful culture?
Yeah, so I'm really excited to be part of Keystone, where the focus is truly on a concept of servant leadership. We call it conscious leadership. But it really is starting with the whole idea of empathy and emotional intelligence. And that is being attuned to what is that matrix of the employee needs with the business needs. And I had mentioned that earlier too, with building up teams in Asia and Latin America, you really have to be able to understand both. And what's that nice intersection where you can still deliver what the team needs while having an impact on the business. And that's really what we focus on as a conscious leader, is tapping. Usually most leaders are pretty strong on the business needs, you know, zoned right in on the financials and how am I going to deliver the month, the quarter, the year, very strong on that end of the equation. But then sometimes, you know, have lost focus or lost sight of that emotional intelligence and the empathy that can also help broaden their leadership capabilities. And so we focus on both, but it's usually that emotional intelligence that needs a little bit of reminding and kind of pulling back out to balance out the business side of the equation. So we spend a lot of time there, and it is really getting into thinking about how do you lead yourself. So it's really starting with an inward view. We're all different in how we lead and why we want to be leaders. And so it's reminding ourselves our own personal why. Why are we in the position that we're in? What inspires us? Why did we want to get here? When you can understand that and what your strengths are and where maybe you're not the strongest, that helps empower you to then lead others. And so we then focus on better understanding that. Then how do you surround yourself with a team of people who can augment your gaps? And having been in hiring positions many, many times, it's really easy to hire people just like you versus really pushing yourself. Are you hiring people that are different and are going to augment some of your gaps and capabilities? So we spend a lot of time thinking through what does that look like and help leaders see that and understand that as part of being a conscious leader. And then the third pillar that we get into is leading culture. And so the big misconception is it's HR's job or it's the CEO's job, right? It's somebody else's job, but it's not mine. And the reality is everyone is responsible for culture, and the biggest influencers of culture is the CEO and their executive leadership team. But as a leader, you can really influence culture down your own team and then spread that across. And so we spend a lot of time talking about what does that look like and how do you weave through your own personal why to how you want to lead into the culture that you're building for your function or your team, and how does that pillar up to the greater good of the company. So there's kind of three key pillars that get at what does it take to be a conscious leader.
I love that. And it is very much a exercise in kind of self-reflection and like knowing yourself and your strengths and weaknesses and what you're trying to do and like, keeping that as your North Star. I really do love it.
We spend a lot of time, or actually have just been talking about this as of late. So many of our CEOs are inundated with one problem after another, especially in today's world, right? It's such a reactive, things are happening faster than you can predict. And so when are CEOs allowed the space and the time to do what you just said, Josh, the self-reflecting and the reminding of like, why am I here? This job is awful today, right? There's those tense moments and everybody wants something from you as a leader. And so you can easily start to feel like you're not doing anyone right. You're not delivering the numbers, and your employees aren't happy. Your engagement scores aren't where you want them. The board's not happy, right? And so at Keystone, one of the big things we've been focusing on is how can we help create space for our CEOs to, excuse me, get back to their personal why?
Well, I do love how you're framing that as a, finding and maintaining and nurturing your personal why. 'Cause I do, even everything you were just saying about like leaders who think about these things and, are feeling like they're getting pulled in a bunch of different directions. Yeah, it is hard. It is hard leading an organization. And if you can really like keep a hold of your North Star, I think it really does help you as a leader. So that's
Yes.
great, great advice. I was hoping to shift gears a little bit into some of the conversations that I know you and I, we talk with business leaders all the time. And when we were prepping for this, you mentioned kind of a trend you'd been seeing in conversations, especially with B2B leaders, where they're thinking that marketing should begin reporting to sales. And I think that that's like a, as someone who's in digital marketing, but I do sales for our organization. It's been kind of swirling in my head a little bit lately. So, where do you think this kind of idea is coming from? What's your take on it?
That's a great question. Where is it coming from? Well, recovering from a cold. I apologize. I'm not sure. I think what's happening is with marketing being so data driven now, and you're in the digital world, so you know all the data that marketers can get to, the world between sales and marketing is becoming much closer. And marketing has a great influence on revenue generation. And so I think there's a natural tendency to look at marketing more holistically in terms of revenue generation. And typically, the revenue generators have been sales. And so I could see from an organizational standpoint, many leaders come from a sales position that it may make sense to, well, let's just put that revenue generator under the revenue generators, which is a sales organization. So I'm certain it comes from a place of well-intended action. I just think the challenge is that the strategies are very different between a sales action-oriented revenue generation and a marketing strategy to get to revenue generation. They're very different techniques, expertise, and capabilities. And so molding that under a sales organization, you can lose the power of what that marketing strategy can bring from a revenue generation standpoint.
Yeah. Yeah, it's curious. You know, we've done a lot of videos and had a lot of conversations about like the kind of loggerheads that sales and marketing can get into sometimes, but also like you're saying, like how intrinsically like connected the two things are. And if only we can get people to kind of start having a shared vocabulary and language about like what it is we're trying to accomplish together, I think that's where you see like the most success. Separate functions with a shared language. At least that's been my experience.
Agree. And I think the way to do that is to hone in on the customer journey. And so remove the internal tension, the internal debates, and really become more customer oriented and customer centric, and spend the time as an organization understanding what is the customer journey that they're going to experience, and then use that to say, what role does marketing play at each step of that customer journey? Yeah. What is their role? What is the data that they're capturing? What does success look like? How are we going to measure? On the flip, ask the same questions of what's the sales role? And I think that really helps define the differences between the two and how together we're trying to achieve action. My whole passion of how do we inspire action? If you really focus on that customer journey through that lens, you can see how the value that the sales team is bringing at a different touch point versus the marketing team, because they're all very different actions. But what we're both trying to do is inspire action along that customer journey. And I've seen that strategy play out really well, where it helps remove some of that tension, but also provides a lot of clarity on what are the accountabilities, what are the roles and responsibilities between teams as they become closer from a revenue generation standpoint. And on the flip side, it also reinforces many of the marketing activities have longer lead times because it is digital. It's a longer play, where some of the sales activities are more quick in action or quick in response. And so how do they play together to inspire action as well?
And I think like where some organizations get tripped up is at the very, very beginning when they are working on that like customer journey. Many times I've seen where marketers are saying like, this is our domain. It's where we're the ones who define the customer journey. And honestly, I feel like the sales team are the people who are kind of belly to belly with the customer all the time. And so getting their input and influence on like helping define that customer journey, like actually listening to them and saying like, what are the needs or how are customers feeling at each stage, is super valuable. And then if you actually consider their feedback and then they see that, then they're more bought in, right? And so it's like, it does almost start at the very earliest stage, which is, we're going to do some customer journey work, but it's not going to be marketing doing it all on their own over here. Like, we're going to take the input of sales and their understanding of our customers to heart. And that's it. It takes leadership, right?
Yep, it does. It takes the sales and marketing leaders to be unified. And the other two teams I would add into that conversation right at the start is your customer service or your customer care team and inside sales. Yeah. They also have such a great pulse and unique perspective of different touch points and engagements with customers that I think brought in early into the process can make a really big impact on the outcomes.
Yeah. Oh, this is a fabulous conversation. I'm sure we could go on for days about sales and marketing, but I'm going to wrap it up with one last question. And it's mostly just asking for some words of advice for leaders. So, you know, we all face one thing that is a constant, and that is change, uncertainty. So any words of advice that you might have for leaders on confronting this reality of challenges, change, and uncertainty?
Gosh, it's a great question. You know, I would start with empathy. You know, as leaders, we live more frequently in that change dynamic, and we spend more time contemplating if that, then this. And so we feel a lot more confident about potential directions, but our teams aren't living in that mode. And so when we introduce change or a new way of doing things, they haven't been sitting with it for as long as we have. They haven't gone through the process of weighing pros and cons or seeing different companies go through different paths, right, and learning from that. And so I would say it starts with empathy and understanding that most people start with a negative. Change is happening because something bad, and something bad is going to happen to me. It is just human nature. And so going back to kind of the beginning of conscious leadership, servant leadership, having that empathy and really trying to understand where's your team coming from and navigating them through that change curve can make a huge impact. And having the patience, you know, again, I always remind, like, we've been living in this state of change and contemplating for much longer than our teams. And so, yes, they have to go through their own journey, and we've got to help bring them there. And the key is, are we bringing along the right managers, the next level of leaders on that journey, so they can help with that change management? And it doesn't all sit with the executive team.
Right. Yeah. I love that answer. Empathy, patience, bring along the right people. This has been a great conversation. I really thank you, Dana, for your time today. So, and I'll just say, that's all we have for today, but check out Keystone Group International and Dana if you get a chance. Thanks again.
All right, thanks, Josh.